We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for the next fiscal year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
The President's request that I lead the department charged with protecting the health of all Americans and providing essential services to some of our most vulnerable citizens is a responsibility I could not refuse. I'm deeply honored by your faith in me, Mr. President.
That's Kathleen Sebelius, President Obama's nominee for Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Her confirmation hearings have begun, the preliminary hearings leading up to the full Senate hearing. She is, in fact, one of the most pro-choice governors in the United States, in U.S. history, for that matter. And many are concerned because in these preliminary hearings, there is an odd and conspicuous silence from otherwise staunch pro-life senators. What's going on? We're going to talk a little bit about that here in the first 10 minutes of Issues Etc. this hour. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us for the next hour. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. It's Friday afternoon, the 3rd of April, a little bit later, after our conversation with Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America, Brian English of the Iowa Family Policy Center will join us to explain how it is that in that Midwest state this morning, the Iowa Supreme Court voted in favor of lifting the restriction on marriage to one man and one woman, opening the door to gay marriage in Iowa, of all places. We'll do some movie reviews with Brian Godawa a little later in the hour as well. Wendy Wright is president of Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. Wendy, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Why do you think the silence from members of the Finance Committee when they're faced with Kathleen Sebelius and her very well-known pro-choice views?
I am absolutely baffled. I attended the hearing yesterday expecting to see some fireworks and was just appalled and shocked that there weren't any questions regarding her atrocious record as not only as governor but as a legislator in Kansas. I mean, we're not just talking about someone who is so-called pro-choice. This is someone who, as a legislator, worked to weaken or eliminate parental notification, informed consent bills. As a governor, vetoed every pro-life bill that came before her, unless for some reason she absolutely had to allow it, like it was part of a bigger bill and she couldn't carve it out. When it was reported that abortion clinics in Kansas had absolutely filthy conditions, cockroaches found in the clinics, aborted babies kept in refrigerators next to the food, and the legislature passed a bill that required basic safety standards in abortion clinics, she vetoed that. And yet this woman is now going to be in charge of the nation's healthcare system. These are things that should have been brought out in this hearing. And we are just appalled that the senators did not address them. And instead, it was just a love fest. Things like, we are lucky to have you as the nominee. It's just atrocious.
Who are the pro-life senators on the Senate Finance Committee, the one that where the silence rung so loud?
There are a number, and in fact, there are two committees that she went before, the Finance Committee and also the Health Committee. There are a number of them, and so the blame can be spread around. You know, the question you're raising is one that's really reverberating around Washington, D.C. today. I just did an interview with a newspaper that covers Capitol Hill, and they're trying to figure out what's going on with these senators. And the reporter mentioned to me that normally when he asks senators about abortion, that they are more than willing to talk. But on this topic, why was there silence on Kathleen Sebelius' nomination? He said, no one is willing to talk about it. So we're all just completely baffled. But I will say, that the door is not closed yet. We've been able to get a two-week reprieve. People were expecting her nomination to be voted on as early as yesterday or today, and she would have sailed right through. But thankfully, there's been the skids have been put on her nomination, which, and Congress is now out for a two-week Easter recess. And so there's an opportunity for people to get to their senators and demand that they raise these very serious issues on her record.
Okay, so just kind of staying in the vein that we've been working in here so far, Wendy, what if they come back from the recess, and of course probably top on the agenda is going to be the full Senate hearing for the confirmation of this nominee, Kathleen Sebelius, to the HHS position. What if no questions or the issue is still met with silence even then?
You know, that to me is almost unimaginable. Again, we're not just talking about someone who's just simply in favor of abortion. There are so many questions she needs to be asked. She needs to be asked about her relationship with the notorious late-term abortionist George Tiller, in which she obstructed investigations into his alleged criminal acts. There's just too much for there to be silence. So rumor is that a senator has put a hold on her nomination. I say rumor because it can be done anonymously, and there's not necessarily a way to know. And so if there's been a hold, that means that there can't be a vote until the hold is lifted. So I pray that that's the case, and that I just encourage people that we all need to act. We need to pressure our senators and tell them that this is a serious issue. And let me put it in some terms that, let's say your senator is not pro-life. There's a real serious problem of Medicare and Medicaid fraud, people billing the government for services that they shouldn't be billing for. And so in the last several years under the Bush administration, there's been an aggressive attempt to recover those funds, to investigate fraud and demand the funds back. Well, we know that there is one recipient of government funding that is has been charged with criminal activity, through investigations have found that they're involved in other kinds of criminal activity, and a former employee has accused this organization of bilking the government of over $180 million. That group is Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in the United States. Planned Parenthood is also a supporter and endorser of Kathleen Sebelius. And so let's say that your senator's not pro-life. They should be pressed. What are they going to do to demand that Sebelius be as aggressive in investigating and demanding recovery of funds from even her own supporters like Planned Parenthood?
I'm wondering, when I read this story about the silence in the Finance Committee and the other committee in advance of the full Senate floor hearing, I thought to myself, you know, it seems ill-conceived, but perhaps these pro-life senators are trying to keep their powder dry and waiting for when the cameras are all turned on and when it's time for the hearing where their comments or the questions might count most. What do you think?
I thought that would be the case. There were certainly cameras at the hearing that I was at yesterday. I got to say, I'm baffled. I don't have an answer as to why they were silent, but we shouldn't allow them to stay silent. They need to be speaking out. They need to make this an issue. They need to, and I think they need to be hearing from their constituents in order for that to happen. They're certainly hearing from us here in Washington, D.C., and while they're home in the next 2 weeks, they need to be hearing from their fellow citizens.
Okay, two quick final questions. First of all, what does the average citizen need to know most about Kathleen Sebelius and her qualifications to run essentially the healthcare system of the United States? That's number one.
Well, she has a very poor record when it comes to that. She didn't really do much regarding health care as the governor of Kansas. But let's take just the basic issue of safety standards for patients. She vetoed a bill that would require that clinics, in this case abortion clinics, have basic safety standards. If she is not willing to ensure the safety of women patients in Kansas, then how can she be entrusted with ensuring the safety of all patients in the United States?
So why, in a nutshell, would Kathleen Sebelius be essentially a bad secretary for the Department of the Health and Human Services.
Her own poor record. Her own poor record on the issue argues vehemently against her being in charge of the nation's healthcare system. The fact that she has surrounded herself with supporters like a notorious late-term abortionist, George Tiller, who just last week was in court on criminal charges and who is not only is a notorious late-term abortionist, but is accused of covering up statutory rape of young girls, doing abortions on minor girls, and not reporting suspected cases of statutory rape. If a 13-year-old girl shows up pregnant, she's being abused, and yet he was not reporting this to the authorities. Those are the kinds of people that Kathleen Sebelius has surrounded herself by. Are these the kind of people that will be advising her if she was the Secretary of Health and Human Services?
Wendy, with 30 seconds, Wendy, what do our listeners need to say to their senators over the next 2 weeks?
Urge them to vote against Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of HHS, that she has a dismal record as the governor when it came to Kansas healthcare system, and there is no excuse for them not raising these serious issues during her nomination.
Wendy Wright is president of Concerned Women for America, based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to Concerned Women for America under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Wendy, keep up the good work. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much for raising this and letting people know about it.
When we come back from our break, we're going to be talking with Brian English, a story that I had to take the mental version of a double take when I heard it this morning, taking the kids to school. The Iowa Supreme Court voting that marriage in Iowa cannot be restricted to one man and one woman. Now, it's attention-grabbing when any Supreme Court does this, but the Supreme Court in Iowa? How did that happen? We're going to be talking with Brian English of the Iowa Family Policy Center about that on the other side of the break. Then we'll do some movie reviews with Brian Gadawa, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. It's Friday afternoon, April the 3rd. We've interviewed four members of the President's Council on Bioethics since President Obama announced his decision to allow federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. Dr. Robert George.
In all the talk about curing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease and so forth, who shuffled off the stage is the victim, the tiny embryonic human being who will now be sacrificed, treated as disposable research material.
Dr. Gilbert Mylander.
Science itself always has moral agendas at work. It's not as if it's value-free. If we suppose that it's entirely neutral with respect to moral questions, it's not.
Dr. William Hurlbut.
Bottom line is whether we as a society are going to endorse the instrumental use of human life at its earliest stages in scientific research.
And Dr. Leon Cass.
He simply said, I think this is the right thing to do. I respect your opinion, but there was no argument other than cures will be forthcoming. That's an argument that only shows a very shallow understanding of the moral question.
Defending life from beginning to end. Issues, etc.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues, etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues, etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues, etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues, etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.